Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I think about a lot of things that have to do with sports, and I think about a lot of things that have to do with the city we live in and the state we live in and the neighborhoods we live in and families, and youth sports have been on my mind, you know that, and decisions that make sense that come out of Salem and the governor's office and decisions that don't make sense. I've been thinking about a lot of things. One of them that has come up frequently, our next guest, Frank Moskow, has founded a charity that calls upon people to adopt a block. I love the concept. It's rooted in cleaning up Portland and the surrounding areas, and Frank Moskow joining us now. Frank, I love this charity that you've started. Where did you get the idea?
I got the idea from moving into the city and taking a look at what was going on and thinking, oh my God, there's got to be a solution to this. I looked around the city, I looked around the state, I looked around the country and came to one really interesting conclusion. Every municipality in the country, every city, every county, every state, every neighborhood association, every business alliance tries to reinvent the same wheel from the ground up. There was no systemic scalable solution to this. So I put on my high-tech hat and tried to come up with a solution that would work in all neighborhoods, all locations, all cities.
Yeah, it's interesting. Is your background in technology? Is that the world you came from?
That is the background, yes.
So was this something you had thought about maybe years ago, and now you just felt like, hey, here's the problem? Or is this the first time you see the problem and then you kind of just go, all right, I got to go out and, let me get involved? Because, Frank, let me be honest. So a lot of people see the same thing and they don't lift a finger. I'm fascinated by this.
Well, I think that I wanted my beloved hometown to be a clean, happy place like it was when I was a younger man. And what I realized is that this was a really interesting problem to solve because nobody had really come up with a way to make this work, regardless of whether you're in a million-dollar condo or you're in a disadvantaged neighborhood. How do you engineer and design a solution that works everywhere and works equally well for everyone? And it took me about a year and a half, 2 years to reimagine what an appropriate solution could be. And it also took me a while to invent the technology because there is a lot of technology embedded in our application.
Frank?
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Frank.
So what makes the technology unique is that when you put in your address in our application, your block pops up highlighted in yellow, and you can easily choose that block or a block nearby to adopt. And so that's what makes it very unique is that people can choose the block that they love the most and care for it on a regular basis with cleanup supplies that we deliver to them for free. So there's no cost. You get to volunteer when you want, how you want, on your own time, on your own schedule. No meetup groups, no organizations to join, no fundraising.
I like that. It cuts out all of the stuff that a lot of people don't like, and it gets at the heart of, like, do you want to make a difference? You even, on your website, I'm looking at it now, adoptoneblock.org, people can donate, so is there a way, like, hey, let's say I don't live in a block or live near a block that needs to be adopted, or somebody's adopted all the neighborhoods around the area that I want to adopt. Is there just a way that I can give to help others do the work?
Sure. There is certainly a donate button on our website. It's never required, always appreciated. And to get to the mapping thing that you're talking about, we have a scroll in, scroll out button on the map so that if you don't want to adopt your block, you can actually scroll out on the map, take a look around in neighboring areas, and choose the block that you care about the most.
Frank Moskow, adoptoneblock.org is the charity. He's doing good work. How many blocks have been adopted?
Right now we have over 3,500 block ambassadors adopting and committing to care for over 3,800 blocks. Most of those are in the Portland metro area.
Wow. It's fascinating. Anna is here as well. Anna's got a question for you, Frank. Go ahead, Anna.
Hi, Frank. First of all, I'm impressed that this is not an organization that has been around for a long time. You launched this just in August of last year during the pandemic?
Yes, and actually we launched in August. We really didn't start turning on the gas until probably September, October.
That's amazing. And my other question is just, what are the stories that you have heard from the people who have done this as far as their interactions with the, you know, homeless people who live potentially on the blocks that have been cleaned up? What are the stories that you've heard?
The stories that I've heard have been very awe-inspiring. There's a number of themes. One of the themes is that parents are able to teach their children about being good land stewards right out their front door. You don't have to drive somewhere to be a land steward. You can do that in your own block, in your own neighborhood, and seeing the next generation really love and care for their block and their neighborhood is awesome. And that means a lot to me. The next thing that we're hearing is that people are getting to know their neighbors. They're cleaning up their blocks. They're getting accolades and thanks from their neighbors. Their neighbors are asking what they can do to help. Together, they're working on cleaning up an area that might be a little harder or a little bit more challenging. And it's really fostering a sense of community. I got an email last night from a neighborhood association chair, and he has about 130 blocks in his neighborhood. When we started talking, 45 were adopted, now 90 are adopted, and he's going block by block with our mapping and figuring out who he knows in that block in his neighborhood to make sure that that block gets adopted, because they want to have the cleanest neighborhood in Portland, because obviously that drives home values, it drives businesses, it drives the simple construct of what John mentioned in his column. And that is, it doesn't matter whether you're a $4 billion investment for a baseball team or a 20-person software company, a 250-person manufacturing company, or just a couple going out to dinner. We all make the same decision every single day. We go to a place and we take a look around and we go, do we want to be there or do we want to keep driving? And it doesn't matter whether you're a person, a small business, or a Major League Baseball franchise. We're all essentially asking the same question.
Frank Moskow is our guest. He is the founder of a nonprofit called Adopt One Block. You can find him at adoptoneblock.org if you want to get involved. For people who may live rural, Frank, is it possible, you know, can you adopt a block anywhere, or do you have to be in relative proximity to adopt a block?
You can certainly adopt a rural block. We have a lot of block adoptions in the city and what I would consider rural areas. The block adoption algorithm does not work for like farmlands and blocks that are defined by, you know, 10 or 20 acres. But for everybody else, it should be pretty straightforward to adopt the block they love.
Was there a final straw moment for you that where you said, hey, this has gone from being something that I'm disappointed by to something I actually have to do something about? Was there a tipping point for you?
The tipping point was really two things happening simultaneously. It was one, I saw what was going on, and it was very clear that the situation was getting worse. And two, I was astounded that nobody had kind of cracked the code. of how to make this a scalable solution. I thought, sure, that when I looked at other parts of the country, that somewhere else somebody had solved this. And once I realized that nobody had solved it, it stuck in my brain, and it was just something I had to get out of my system to figure out whether it would work or not.
You've done so much good already, you know, and I kind of found you because I was talking to Tim Boyle, the CEO of Columbia Sportswear, and, you know, he had told me that ultimately, you know, rather than give a donation to the city, he had turned to you and one other nonprofit and said, you know, I feel like this is a good investment. So I started looking at you more, Frank, and I got to be honest, like, I really want to get behind this, and I really want to help, you know, promote and draw attention to you and clean things up. Ultimately, what's victory to you in the end? Is there a victory where you look around and every block in the city is adopted and that's winning, or what is winning?
Winning is defined by we have the city we used to have, where it's clean, neat, inviting, and safe. And that when you're talking about a Major League Baseball franchise or any other business or any other person deciding whether or not they are going to invest their time and energy in Portland and in Oregon, that the way in which we feel and look from a clean, neat, inviting, and safe is actually an asset rather than a liability.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's kind of how I found you is, you know, I was looking at, you know, why would Major League Baseball pick Portland given the appearance that it's in? You get a chance to see those victories block by block. What does the before and after look like in when you look at those places?
Well, the before and after is that I do a lot of walking in the city, and the after is that when you walk in a neighborhood or you walk up and down certain streets and you go, wow, you know what? This is cleaner. This feels better. It's not just that the days are getting longer. It's like there's no trash on the street. The people are coming together, and it feels good, and it looks good. And there is a revitalized sense of community. And, you know, that's the vicarious thrill, is being able to walk through a place that wasn't very good and 60 or 90 days later walk through a place and go, not only is it clean today, I know it's going to be clean tomorrow, too.
The adoptions, Frank, is it a one-year commitment? Is that right?
We ask for a one-year, you know, where you take care of the block that you love, you know, once a week on average. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less, just depending upon the nature of the block. You know, I think that what's happening is that people are finding this oddly addictive. They get in it, they claim their block, they see their block highlighted in yellow, and they feel a certain passion and ownership for their block. It's not just a responsibility, a duty, or a volunteer effort anymore. It becomes a passion. And there's nothing like walking out your front door and seeing your success, walking out your front door and having your neighbors thank you for enabling that success. All of that gets fairly addicting.
Frank, I really want to commend you for the work you're doing, and I want to call people's attention again. If you want to get involved, if you want to adopt the block, or you want to give and help Frank accomplish the mission, adoptoneblock.org is the website. Frank, you keep us updated, and if there's anything we need to know about, you've got my info, and I appreciate what you're doing out there.
Hey, thank you, and thank you for taking this skinny little guy with no athletic capability or prowess and mentioning him in a sports column. I really appreciate it. Kind of made my month.
You've made it, Frank. I appreciate you, man. There's Frank Moskow, adoptoneblock.org. Anna, quick takeaway there. What strikes you about Frank's story?
He's smart. He's smart. He's using, I mean, that's the beauty of it, is he's using his brain, you know, the skills that he's acquired as an executive, and he's applying them to solve a problem. And, you know, environmentally, intrinsically, community-wise, it's a great thing. It makes me think of, like, the broken window theory. It's like, if you walk into a city neighborhood and there's a broken window, the likelihood that that neighborhood is going to continue down that path is higher. So he's trying to avoid the broken window theory on the city and getting families involved. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, and you know, he told me initially that, you know, his background was in tech. I'm not surprised now, as you look at some of the interactive map and you can see people cleaning things up. Mm-hmm. But 3,000 plus blocks adopted.
Yeah, he wants 10,000. That's his goal. But he'll get there. But he needs all of us to, you know, jump on board.
I think the audience of the show could get him to 5, maybe 6 tomorrow, by tomorrow. Go to his website. If you want to get involved, get involved. If you want to give him a few dollars, give him a few dollars. I know that I was grateful for Tim Boyle at Columbia, who, you know, Boyle wanted to give ODOT money, $145,000, to clean up Highway 26, Highway and I-405, because it was a mess.
In the downtown,
downtown corridor. And ODOT took the money, spent $14,000 of it, 10%, and then told him, we don't know what to do with the rest, and gave it back to him. And then he offered it to the city of Portland. He got no response. He waited a year. They never got back to him. And he ultimately decided that he would give the money to solve and to adopt one block. Mm-hmm. He split it between them. So he made an investment in Frank Moscow, and I see what he saw as he made that investment. So I think we can all get involved, and I'm calling, you know, look, we've talked about this with our own kids. Love to get them out. Love them to, like, show them, you know, that you got to be a steward in your community. Show them that, right?
Mm-hmm. You can't just tell them.
Haven't done a good enough job.
No, we haven't.
But I think this is an opportunity for us and for others who are in Portland and maybe beyond. Like, you know, if you're listening out of state and you just want to, hey, I believe in what Frank's doing, send him a couple bucks. Mm-hmm. Help him buy some cleaning supplies for somebody who's going to do the actual work.
Yeah, he sends you, like, you know, trash bags, heavy-duty trash bags, but also, like, you know, a red container for needles, if you find hypodermic needles, to properly dispose of those and other types of cleaning supplies.
Culligan Water Cooler Report is coming up. Leave it here. Every day on the show, we do the Culligan Water Cooler Report. It's brought to you by Culligan of Oregon. We had our water tested. You know why? Because I want to know what the heck I'm drinking. Have Culligan of Oregon test your water. They'll do it. No risk, no obligation. They came out, they collected the water from an outdoor spigot, and the very next day, I knew exactly what we were drinking. You can check out their filtration systems and their products and water delivery, but first and foremost, make sure that the water that your family is drinking is safe. Go to CulliganofOregon.com. Major League Baseball hitters are hitting .233, and it is the subject of our Culligan Water Cooler Report.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
MLB hitters hitting .233 this season. 24.3% of the time, they are striking out. How would you solve this problem, and how big a problem is this for baseball? Zach, Peter Sampson, the barking dogs in the background, you guys tell me, how big a problem is this for MLB?
Well, it's a pretty big problem. I mean, baseball is still my first love, but it doesn't resemble the game I grew up on in the 80s. And it might sound counterintuitive. How you fix this is you deaden the baseball. You force these guys to learn to play station-to-station contact baseball again. It's going to take a few years to sort through that as hitters adjust, but that is the key. Deaden the baseball.
Zach, how would you do it?
Yeah, teach hitters to hit oppo, you know, teach them to the fundamentals again. Or, John, like I said before, cork the bats. I'm just kidding.
Peter doesn't want to juice the ball, but you want to juice the bats.
I want it more exciting, man.
I just go back to, like, you know, Major League Baseball played around with, you know, raising the mound and Bob Gibson made hay with a raised mound. He had the lowest ERA in Major League Baseball history the year that the mound was raised. Okay, so by virtue of that, you know, I know baseball's talked about, there is a minor league where they are talking about moving the pitching rubber back 1 foot to give hitters an advantage. I'm just going to lower the mound. I'm going to make pitchers get down off the hill. I'll lower the mound by 6 inches. Let's experiment with that. Let's make pitchers throw from an angle that hitters like. And, you know, maybe you get less. I don't mind when guys try to hit home runs, but I don't like 24% of the plate appearances resulting in strikeouts. That's boring.
Yeah, it's absolutely boring. I can say I don't like the idea that the minor league had where they're moving the pitching rubber back by a full foot, because I don't know how effective that's even going to be. You get more time, you're going to have these massive 12-6 curveballs. Pitchers are going to adapt to that, even if it's slowing the heat down. I mean, maybe dropping the mound, you know, you won't have, who you said, Bob Gibson with the 1.12. Yeah.
Danny McClain.
Yeah, Danny McClain stopping gambling long enough to win 30 games. So maybe having a little more flat might be a difference. But I think it's just because hitters are just trying to do nothing other than tee off. You have to incentivize them to not do that.
Yeah, I like your idea because it's counterintuitive. You deaden the baseball. So you're saying by deadening the baseball, you're going to require the hitters to be guys that are okay hitting 300 and playing station to station rather than trying to hit home runs, and now you've lost the art of the stolen base in this era as well because people don't want to give up outs.
Yeah.
It's all become about hitting home runs. Bob Gibson's ERA, 1.12. That's so outrageously low for a starting pitcher. It doesn't even seem possible. And yet that resulted in the pitching mound being lowered from 15 inches down to 10 inches. So what about this? What if we shrank the strike zone a little bit? Would that help hitters?
It might. Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't they do that, say, 20 years ago? They had sort of unofficially shrunk it down?
It was the same year. So they had all these problems where the pitcher's ERAs were too good. So they lowered the mound from 15 inches to 10. I'm going to take 2 inches off that mound right now. Take it down to 8. And then they also said strike zone, which used to be top of the knees in the armpit, would now go, frankly, it was shoulders to knees. They lowered it to top of the knees to the armpit. So it was a little smaller. I wonder if you take the strike zone even smaller, if you would make the pitchers really pitch to the heart of the plate a little more. Pitchers are too good, and the hitters are all trying to hit home runs. And in the end, the hitters are hitting .233. That's going to be an all-time low for batting average all time. And 24.3% of the time they're striking out. That's going to be a record.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.